Things and my experts today, they are just turning the wave in small business and entrepreneurship and all of that. And I felt super blessed when they agreed to come back this morning and to share the stage together and to just impart to you how you can enter into 2011 with a broad awareness of how you can remain empowered and to build success. So you stop pointing fingers and blaming the system and blaming this person and that person and just harness the things that we need to do. So I want to encourage you to keep the phone lines busy. Keep the questions coming in. The number to call is 646-915-8166. And I have majority of my panelists already waiting in the virtual green room, and I want to bring them on the air one by one. And first, I want to bring in on Mrs. Yolanda Webb. And Yolanda is the founder and CEO of Elon Cosmetics out in Cincinnati, Ohio. And for those of you who heard Yolanda when she was on the first time, you got a glimpse of her powerful story and how she began the cosmetic company. So, Yolanda, welcome again to the New Day Show.
Thank you. It's nice. It's my pleasure to be back again. I always enjoy talking with you and just kind of sharing a part of the journey. So thank you once again for inviting me.
It's a pleasure. My next expert this morning is none other than Mr. Jeffrey Reeves out of Denver, Denver. And Mr. Reeves was on just a few weeks ago, and because of a time mix up with the different time zone, you did not get enough of him. And I was so honored when he committed right there that he would come back today, and he is here with us. And JR, good morning, and thank you again, sir, for coming.
Well, you're more than welcome, and it's my pleasure to be here to work with you and to meet Yolanda and your other guests.
Yes, thank you, JR. And my next panelist and expert who is already here is Dr. Ray DiComio. And you two had heard Dr. Ray a few weeks on the show. He has committed an entire life in one way or another around entrepreneurship. And today you are going to hear from him about how you should enter into 2011 with all the insight and knowledge and information you want. Dr. Ray, good morning, and thank you for coming.
Well, thank you for inviting me. It's always a pleasure. And because of your positive messages is the reason I like to be involved with you.
Oh, thank you so much, Ray. And when my other panelists come on, join us, with the permission of the ones that are here already, we will just welcome them. So again, let us not delay. Let us go into the task at hand. I want, they say beauty and ladies go first. I'm going to have Yolanda, briefly tell the people about how you began, how you began the company, and you can go directly into your presentation about how you see entrepreneurs empowering themselves in 2011 for a great success and brighter future.
Okay, thank you. Just briefly, I've been in business now. This is actually my 10th year. The cosmetics line, of course, with the journey, we've spent time in Macy's department stores, so we're a prestige brand. That was a couple of years ago. We came out about 2 years ago. We spent about 2 years there to become a little bit more competitive in the marketplace with other cosmetics brands. And so we're now engaged in redefining the look, the brand, the outer packaging. Well, in the meantime, so that we didn't just disappear, we started and we began a magazine. As you know, Daphne, we have
Yes.
a Elan Couture magazine.
Mm-hmm.
We launched the magazine a year ago. Daphne was actually one of our first interviewees that we did a story and an article on. The magazine now at this point has well over 200,000 readers. That's
wow.
Phenomenal for a new entry prestige magazine, fashion and beauty magazine, into the marketplace. We decided to do some different types of marketing. We have some apps out there that allow you to download us on your iPod, your iPad. We also are both a digital magazine that's becoming more prevalent in the marketplace, but we still do print, but we only do the print via single sale subscription. So you have to order it, and then it is sent directly to you. With that said, in those 10 years, what I've learned about being an entrepreneur is this thing called persistence and never giving up. You know, part of my journey, and as if you want to be an entrepreneur, you have to understand that it's a part of what comes along with that is failure, because you can never become successful without failure. And I think a lot of people are hesitant to strike out on their own because they don't want to fail. Well, you fail at anything. You could have a job with a major corporation and you can get laid off tomorrow. That's still failure, but you learn from that. And so being an entrepreneur, taking control and responsibility of your own life, is that same thing, except for you're working for yourself. You're responsible. So I think what I would encourage any entrepreneur who might be listening is to take a look at all of the things that you did last year or in 2010, both your successes and your failures, and list them out. What worked, what did not work. And you take those things that worked and you expand on them for 2011, and you leave those things behind that didn't work. You know, stop running around in circles trying to make something work. If you're not good at that something, then that tells you that you need to move on from it. We have this thing about it's mine. I did it. It's my baby, and I don't want to let it go. The sooner you let something go, the sooner something else can come in to fill that void. So if you this widget didn't work, then design a better widget and move forward into 2011. But we, for us, it was our packaging, our design on the cosmetics. It wasn't as attractive. It wasn't bringing and generating the numbers that we needed. We went to Macy's. We said, this is not working. Let us come back when we get it right. But in the interim, we found that we had another successful idea, which was our magazine. We began to work on that, and that brand simply took off. And so, for us, for me personally, it is as an entrepreneur, you have to have a plan. Everybody always says that. you know, you have to have a business plan. But most entrepreneurs don't take the business plan back out and look at it at all. You know, they write it the first time because they need it to get money, and then they never look at it again. Just think of your business plan as goals, strategies, and objectives, and check those off as you move into the new year. And you know, one last thing that I would encourage any entrepreneur in the new year to take a look at is your own skill set. You know, many entrepreneurs want to start businesses, but they don't have the necessary skill sets. Yes, you can design the widget, but you can't sell it. And so you might need to have someone that's there with you that can be the salesperson, or you may need to have someone there that's the administrative person. And so although we want to wear all the hats, when we try to wear all the hats, we let something fall through the cracks. And that's unfortunately how a lot of small businesses fail and don't succeed. Even if you can't pay that someone else right away, find someone that you know that might be willing to do it once a week, you know, once a month, to help you learn that skill set. That I think for me, Daphne, is what I would encourage entrepreneurs to take into 2011 with them.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Yolanda, because everything that you have just mentioned, it's not that there are new ideas or new information, but it's that you are affirming what we have been hearing all along. A lot of us as entrepreneurs thinking, oh, well, the income is not coming in. I can't hire someone. But we need to be creative wherein we can utilize bartering to get what we want until we can compensate someone to do
that.
Thank you so much for for just affirming those ideas. Mr. Jeffrey Reeves, would you please just tell the people a little bit about you and your expertise around entrepreneurship, your insight and money and all of that, and you also can just take time to do your 15 minutes presentation.
Well, thank you for the opportunity. Yolanda, first of all, thanks for what you just, for your comments, because I really appreciated them. I take when it comes to entrepreneurs, I've worked mostly with entrepreneurial type folks most of my career, which has been 40 years now in the financial services side of the business. And the things that Yolanda talked about, persistence, dealing with failure, letting go of things that you're hanging on to just because they're yours, responsibility, having the right skills, those are all extraordinary ideas and extraordinarily important for entrepreneurs. One of the things that I deal with entrepreneurs on a regular basis is money issues, and I deal with them in a unique way, because most of my experience has shown me that the traditional whatever somebody says this is the way you're supposed to do it, I look at it very carefully and ask myself whether that's a good way, the best way, or just traditional wisdom. So a lot of folks these days are putting money into tax-qualified retirement plans, for example. And over the decades that I've worked in the business of helping people prepare for transitions out of their business and into retirement, what I've discovered is that most of those plans end up failing. They fail because they're based on the stock market. They're based on investments, or what are called investments, but in fact are not investments. They're really gambles. Oh. And so I think as you go into the year 2011 and you're thinking about how you're going to operate your business and how you're going to succeed in your business, but more importantly, how that business is going to serve you for the rest of your life. Mm-hmm. And after you're no longer in that business, or you decide to just scale back your activity, how you're going to manage the income you need to assure the income you need. And there are four things that every entrepreneur needs to end up. There are four things where you need to end up with. Number one, you need to be debt free. You don't want to get to the point where your business is so reliant on debt that a glitch in the marketplace is going to kill you. So getting debt free, and that doesn't mean that you have no debt. It means that if you have debt, you also have the resources to eliminate that debt when the time comes. The second thing is you want to make sure that you have plenty of ready cash, plenty of easy access dollars that you can use to take advantage of opportunities and to deal with emergencies, because they all come. And I could tell you 1,000 stories about that, but I won't right now. The third thing is you want to make sure that you are locking in a future income every year. So when you start 2011, if you don't have a guaranteed income that's going to be there for you 10 years from now or 15 or 20 when you're going to need it, you need to start locking in a bit of that every year. And then the fourth thing is you're working for yourself, but you're also working for your family and for your legacy. And it's important that you find a way to crystallize that legacy, to make it real, and to bring it from a conceptual level to the level where you can pay forward the wisdom as well as the wealth that you've accumulated over a lifetime of business. And I think a lot of what Yolanda said represents the wisdom side of that, of knowing that. I work with a guy here in Denver, a guy named Joe Saba, who is a nationally renowned speaker. And Joe says one other thing that I thought came up to me when Yolanda was speaking is he always says, do what you do best and hire the rest. So I'm going to take another idea into 2011 with you as far as your business goes. Don't try to do everything. As Yolanda said, Daphne said, even if you can't hire somebody, find somebody that will work with you on an if-come basis to get things done. Because if you try to do everything, and I've done it, believe me, talk about the failures that I got more failures than I have successes by a rather wide margin. And So that's what I suggest you take into the new year, is a new way to look at money. Don't believe everybody who walks in the door and says, hey, you know, you should do these tax-qualified things because they're wonderful. In fact, they're not wonderful. They're very expensive, and they generally don't work, at least in my experience. And make sure that you've got ready cash, that you've got you're working on eliminating debt, that you've got a long-term secure income program in place, and that you have a legacy to pay forward. And that's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
Thank you so much, JR. And, you know, I am just here, and I'm just getting the goosebumps, you know, to hear the kind of information that is being delivering to us, because if people wait until 11:59 p.m. on the last day of December, and then they rush for a piece of paper, and everybody wants to jot down New Year's resolution. And by the second day of January, they all forget about it. And this was one of the reasons I said, why don't we take a jump on this and get entrepreneurs to begin to design their plan now in November, so they will no longer fall into the trap of what we have been doing for many years. But to just get these great ideas and workable ideas, that there's nothing that has been said by Yolanda and by JR that we have not heard before. We just need to implement them. And they are so simply laid out that we can follow them. So, JR, thank you. I want to remind the people that the phone lines are open. 646-915-8166. The chat room is up as well. Get the questions coming in. You got to get it while you can, because I'm not promising you that you will have this line of experts together again. So today's your day. You got to eat the potato while it's hot. So let me hear from you. Dr. Ray.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. Why are you laughing?
Well, because first of all, the way I look at the day is I look at every day as I'm lucky to be alive and enjoy it today. So
yes.
Why not be happy about it? It takes less muscles to smile than it does to frown.
That's right. That's right. That's right. So would you please tell the people a little bit about you and entrepreneurship, and also go ahead and take your 15 minutes to do your presentation around entrepreneurship and what insight you're giving us to go into 2011 with.
Okay. First of all, any listener there that's listening, is you are responsible for your own success. Nobody else is. You are. So if you start with that idea, then you say, okay, let's expand upon that a bit. Would you like to do something that makes you sad, or let's say incomplete, or kind of like we call work, or would you like to do something that's what I would call fun and make a living at it? And when I finally figured out that the answer to that question, I said, I'm only going to do things that are really fun for me, but that I can make money with. And so you say, okay, what would be the most fun thing to do? Now, in my career. And by the way, I'm 63. I retired a year ago. I taught at Central Connecticut State University for 30 years. But prior to that, I didn't know what I wanted to do. And I went into what we call jobs. I did a job here, and I was as an accountant. Actually, I started out, I left college, and my first job was in sales. And I really flubbed the dub there on that one. It was terrible, and so I said, "This isn't for me." But in retrospect, it really was. But I'll get to that story. So afterwards, I said, "Well, what can I do? What's another job for me?" I said, "How about accountant?" So I went into accounting, and I did that for like 4 or 5 years. But as an accountant, what I was doing was counting the days away of my life. Mm. I hated the work. But, as an accountant, you count everything. So I counted how many days I worked. 347 days I've worked at this job, and I've got, 30,142 days left. So one day I said to myself, wait a second, I don't want to count my life away. This isn't really for me. And I said, and I started assessing who I am as a person. So I know that what I really want to do is inside my heart. It is there. Just like your guests here, what they really want to do is inside their heart. Mm-hmm. And what I really wanted to do at that point in time is I wanted to become a teacher. That's really what I wanted to do. I'm a teacher. I like people. I love people. And I love teaching. But in order to be a really effective teacher, a effective professor, you have to know what you're going to do. And it's not just studying anything. You have to study what's right for you. Mm-hmm. Well, I love marketing. Didn't know how much I loved it, though, which I really do. And I had this friend of mine, and we went through the assessment of who I am, how I am, what I like to do, and started saying, what would be the most fun thing to do? And it came out to be, I want to be a professor in marketing, but specialize in a particular area, personal selling. Most people say, I hate sales. Well, where the most amount of money is where the most amount of people hate. If they hate sales, that's the place to be because that's where the most opportunity is. But, again, it has to go into your own heart, you see. So when I went out and I started learning how to sell, and I went out and I strictly commissioned. Everything was straight commission. I don't care what it was. I sold vacuum cleaners. I sold magazines. I sold siding. I sold roofing. Then I went into a more sophisticated marketing. As I'm learning how to sell and getting better and better, more opportunities are opening up. So I learned how I got involved with the stock market and became a stock broker and started to get really good. I met some really good salespeople there. And I'm starting to meet better people and learning from them to the point where I'm starting to get pretty good. Then I moved into estate planning, which is what our guest is talking about now, one of our guests. And there I got even better, and I started working with one of the best companies in the country. Can I name the company, by the way?
No, because they're not sponsoring the show, so I'd rather not.
Okay. Fair enough. Well, in any event, I got into sales, and I got really good. And by the time I was around 32, 33 years old, I became financially independent through sales.
Mm.
In the meantime, a friend of mine at the university who I've been talking about because I would like to teach there, he said, well, Ray, why don't you teach part-time sales, you know, in the marketing department? So I said, well, that sounds like fun. So I started teaching part-time sales. And before you know it, I had my MBA. And then he says, Ray, he says, listen, we'll sponsor you to go to get your PhD. Would you like to get a PhD in marketing, in sales? I said, yeah, that's great. Sounds like fun to me. Everything
Wonderful.
Became what was fun for me to do. Mm-hmm. And then so I ended up getting a PhD. I wrote a book called Counselor Selling Techniques. And I got the PhD in that little particular area. I went to England. I've traveled the world teaching. I've been to Sicily. I've been to Hawaii. I've been to the Orient. I've traveled the world teaching. But in the meantime, I was also doing consulting work. I did consulting in the area of personal selling because I would train their sales force on how to sell, since I knew how to sell. Wrote journal articles. Because in other words, I always did things that are like kind of fun things to do. Had a tremendous professional career all the way up the line. I've written journals. I'm working on two books now. We've talked about creating your own world. You know that story.
Yeah.
And so I retired about a year ago. And in the meantime, I met one of my wonderful students. The guy was an absolute genius. And he and I are now doing what we call URL optimization. We've talked about that a couple of weeks ago. Mm-hmm. And that's where we optimize internet sites. To make them more efficient so that they're not on pay. So if somebody does a Google search on a particular account, that account is more apt to be on the first or second page than on the 40th or 50th page. So now I'm into optimization. I love to sing, so I actually now I have this gal and I. We're doing concerts, local concerts in the area. I have a karaoke system. I'm doing dances for special kids. All of these are little business. They're fun activities, but they're little businesses in and of themselves. And I'm having a wonderful, wonderful time. Life has been good, and I thank God every day. So am I happy? Sure.
Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. Now, I'm going to ask a question. And I'm not going to pose it to anyone. Any one of the experts on the panel can take the question. If you could create a checklist for a new entrepreneur, because there's a lot of people who are now losing their jobs and their long-time safety blanket, as you would refer to it to. And they are thinking now, they're listening to the show and they say, well, I listen to those people on there and I have this down pat, but where do I begin? What would some of the first things be that you want them to look at as a scared person just beginning?
Could I address that one for a moment? Since,
sure.
Since I worked with so many young people.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things I would say is that There are tests that you can take, the Armstrong test, for example, and they're not really tests. They look at your personality type and your interests and your general overall intelligence. And then what they do is they give you an outline of different kinds of professions that would make sense for that person. And by the way, when we talk about entrepreneurship, there's a lot of ways of looking at it. For example, now, a lot of people disagree with me on this one, but if you work at a job, a kind of what we would call a job, but I might call it play. If you really like doing this particular job, for example, I'd call it play, not job. That's right for you, and that you enjoy this particular endeavor, whatever that endeavor is, you're entrepreneurial. And let me give an example. Let's say, for example, you really love accounting. Just say you are an accountant type person. Well, geez, if you work in an accounting firm and doing what you love to do, what's wrong with that? There's nothing wrong with that. That's actually a wonderful thing to do. If you're doing something that you love to do, that's what you should be doing. That's the right thing for you to do. Then later on, as you gain more experience within that endeavor, you can go and build a business around it. For example, you can start part-time, do accounting part-time. Whatever that endeavor is that you like, for example, in sales, there was a little tough one. I started on a straight commission. I didn't know a darn thing on how to sell, but I surely learned it. I studied it. I became a student of it to the point where I was able to get to a point where I could make a living. Then I'd be able to make my fortune for me, then be able to move into a profession that I really love to be in. And they all tied in together. So you have to go to your heart first, find out what you really would love to do, and that's a good start. And I say, look at your personality first. Look at things you'd love to do. Break them up, right now. Here's what I would like to do, little ideas, and let your subconscious mind come up with some good ideas for you.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Dr. A. Any of my other panelists, J.R.R. Yolanda, do you want to have an input in that?
I'll be happy to jump in there.
Mm-hmm.
Ray hit the nail on the head. Aristotle hit the nail, and Plato hit the nail many centuries ago when they said know thyself. Shakespeare hit it when he said to thine own self be true.
Mm-hmm.
Yolanda referenced knowing it in her heart earlier, I believe, or you did, one of the two of you.
Mm-hmm.
I've worked with I mentor insurance agents and financial advisors all across the country. Right now, that's part of what I do. I'm like Ray. I love to teach. I love to educate and inform, and so helping other folks who are in a similar business, in the same business, is very gratifying. What I find is, and Ray can probably talk to this as well, is that when it comes to quote marketing. After you know yourself, the next thing you have to know is your market.
Mm-hmm.
And so many entrepreneurs define their market by their product.
Mm-hmm.
I sell a certain kind of let's say, retirement plans. And so I sell retirement plans, so my market is small businesses that buy retirement plans. And when I deal with agents, I point out to them that that's not really a market. It's a group of people. It's with some common interests, but it's not a market. The market has to be much more clearly defined, and I could get into that, but it would take 2 hours all by itself.
Mm-hmm.
But the point that I want to bring out most on relative to this is that The folks that are the most successful in my business and in most of the businesses that I've worked with are the folks that have a clear understanding or clear knowledge of themselves and a very, very clear knowledge of a very specific market. Doing concerts for special needs kids, that's a really good definition of a market. Doing concerts is just kind of throw the confetti in the air and see where it lands.
Mm-hmm.
So I appreciate everything Ray said. I think Yolanda hit a market when she hit her magazine idea. She defined her market and obviously knew herself in order to be able to address that market. So as an entrepreneur goes into 2011, knowing who you are and what you like to do is number one. Knowing your market is number two. And my last comment is there's an old saying that I repeat to my mentees all the time, and that is find the work you love and you'll never work another day again.
That's right. That's right.
I'm 70, Ray, and
okay.
I'm not retired. Nor will I ever, nor will you. So
I got 3-4 more new jobs this year.
That's right. So saying you're retired is retirement is the stupidest idea we ever came up with.
Absolutely, I would agree.
Yeah.
So that's my story, and I'm sticking to it. And by the way, One last thing, because I'm not plugging my books, so I gotta say something about that too.
You will get an opportunity to.
Yeah, all the ideas that we talk about here, I've written two books about those things in over 300 articles, so we could talk about that later. Thank you for listening to me.
Yes, and I tell you, I am so excited that I'm in good company.
Well, Daphne, let me just kind of piggyback on what both Ray and Jeffrey said, you know, because I agree with all of that. The other component to that, though, I think, is that most people really don't ask themselves when they really want to become an entrepreneur is they really need to define their definition for success. Mm-hmm. If they only want to be in business to make money, they're never going to be successful.
Right.
You know, the objective is that I want to make a contribution, then you will discover new ways of making money and know that those doors will open up to you to be able to do that. But if you simply want to pay the bill, your bills, you're never going to be successful. You're really never going to be successful. Success, you have to define that, you know, that the part of that long-term vision. And I've talked to so many entrepreneurs here in Cincinnati, and, you know, it's like that old saying from that movie, Field of Dreams, if you build it, they will come. Well, they build it, they open it. You know, they open the store, and then in 6 months they're out of business and they can't figure out why. Mm-hmm. And they'll say to me, I did all of it. I put all my money into marketing. And I said, but what was your definition of success? Well, mm-hmm. I wanted to open a store. Well, you did that.
Mm-hmm.
You
That's
were
successful. Right. That's
open
right.
The store.
That's
so,
right.
You know, in defining what success is, they have to really ask themselves, what am I doing this for? What am I going
mm-hmm.
into this?
Mm-hmm.
You know, most people want, like I said, I'll use that example. Well, I wanted to open a store. Well, you were, by your own definition, successful.
Successful.
Open store, you know. And so most entrepreneurs forget that you have to be able to clearly define that for you. Not
mm-hmm.
for anyone else, not on that business plan. What does success look like to you? Because if you can't define it, then you can't achieve it. And so for me, it was to put in place a global brand for women, period. That's
right.
What it was. I wanted to be sustainable. I want to leave a legacy, and so you have to. And I think both Ray and Jeffrey said that about leaving a legacy. You know, getting into business to leave something, and that's why I think many of us as entrepreneurs we fail. We don't do that. We just simply want to open a business
mm-hmm.
or start a business. It's much more to it than that.
Mm-hmm. You know, I want to piggyback Yolanda and share two stories. Only because you just made the statement you made. It was about 5 years ago, a woman from my church had switched careers and she began doing real estate. And every time I would see her, I would be so excited and ask her about, you know, well, how is the new career going and so on. And, you know, with the longest face she could ever muster to give me, oh, I'm not making any money. And I gave her three opportunities to say that. And the next time she said that to me, I said to her, I said, you know the reason you're not making any money? Because the people are coming to you. You are showing them the properties. And then they are going to someone else and they are making the purchases because they notice that your eyes are only in their checkbooks or their credit card. You have no interest in changing their lives. And I said to her, when you begin to show these people that you want to make a difference in their lives and in the lives of their family, then they are going to start doing business with you. And she dropped her mouth open and she said, who do you know at my office? I said, I don't even know what office you are affiliated with. But I said, I serve people, and I know if you show people that you're going to make a difference, especially when it has to do with their family, they will do business with you. So yeah. I wanted to share that. The other thing, story I wanted to share is around defining success. I think it was maybe last year I was having a conversation with somebody I know greatly. And we're talking about some of the things I was looking to do and all of that. And said to me, well, oh, but you need to be very successful to do that. And I said, oh, I am very successful. I said, let me correct you because I'm not sure if you know what success means for me. I said, let me correct you right now. I'm not wealthy, but I said, I'm extremely successful. And when I define success for me, and I begin to bullet all the successes that I had set for myself that I have accomplished and the new ones that I'm working on, he said, can I give you a hug? And he said, I want to thank you for this lesson. Because he said, I oftentimes confuse wealth with success. And he said, I need to take a leaf out of your book. And I need to define what success means for me because he says, I am 49 years old and I always confuse success with money. So I just want to thank you all for this this insight this morning. I want to get the phone lines busy, guys. Come on, call in. The number is 646-915-8166. Don't just sit and absorb. We want this to be extremely interactive, and we want to have you call in. Now, my next question to my experts is discipline. Entrepreneurship takes discipline. And I know a lot of people, as Yolanda said, they go in and they look on this late night TV and they watch all these infomercial and they see people becoming multimillionaire in 6 hours. And they think that, okay, I'm going to buy that package and I'm going to be multimillionaire. There's some disciplines that on people who are looking to embark on this entrepreneurial journey need to make sure they have in place.
Is that a question?
Okay, it is. It is a question. Yeah. Yolanda, you want to take it?
Well, the discipline piece, I think, is critical. I don't know if entrepreneurs understand what that means, and I think one of the other gentlemen talked about, you know, it really is not about working harder. It is about working smarter. I want to be able to enjoy this thing that I do. And so what I did was do my homework up front. So I did the hard part of all of this, all of the research that goes into this, putting down what my goals were, establishing what that business plan looked like, surrounding myself with the people that could help me move this forward. And the discipline that it takes now for me is I plan to work in an 8-hour day, but that is a productive 8-hour day, and you have to have the discipline to stay on task. And I talk about that, and I know, Daphne, you said you'd give us a chance to plug our books, but, you know, my book is Lack Doesn't Live Here Anymore. It is about what is it that you need to do. You need to know every aspect of your business. And so, you know, for me personally, in both the magazine and the cosmetics industry, I set aside time during the day to meet with both our fashion editors, our beauty editors, and then, you know, there's set scheduled time. That is a discipline that I've had to learn in order to keep all of the components of what it is that we do running smoothly so that no one is frustrated and everyone knows what their role is and what their job is. That's a discipline, but you discipline yourself. You know, there are the activities that can get us distracted, but those distractions in my day don't take me off task, not totally off task. And I love what I do, so it is very easy to flow into that. And so I think the discipline for entrepreneurs is critical. You know, one of the things that I talk about in my book in terms of success is No, you cannot put a sign up on the door that says "Be right back," and you're gone to lunch. You're gone to, you know, you can't do that. Yeah, you have to have the discipline. If you know that you're not going to have folks to work for you, then perhaps your hours say we're only open, you know, Tuesday through Thursday, but you give your customers some opportunity to know what your specific defined schedule is. Mm-hmm. And that will take some discipline. And that's, again, is what leads back into that whole entrepreneur being out of business in 6 months. They've not thought out those details carefully, I believe.
Before I go to Ray and JR, Yolanda, I just want to thank you for taking that time piece, because people become entrepreneurs and all of a sudden they think they can only work 3 hours a day or 4 hours. You know, they
right.
go on to this place and do that place. And I asked them, I said, when you were clocking in, how many hours were you putting in?
That's exactly
so,
right.
Now you become an entrepreneur, you must have the same commitment and respect for time, because you are...
It's really a respect for yourself. It's mm-hmm, a respect mm-hmm. for yourself. If you respect someone else's business to give
That's
them
right.
8 hours, 10 hours, 12 hours of your time,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I think Ray said it, it's like even when you work on a job that has somebody else's name on the company,
mm-hmm.
you still consider yourself an entrepreneur in that environment if you really like what you're doing. And so
okay.
when you move out on your own, if you now want to work 3 hours a day when you were giving Mr. So-and-so 12
mm-hmm.
hours a day, you're disrespecting your own self, because
That's right.
you made them successful. Make yourself successful at this. And so I think that you're right about that.
Wonderful, wonderful. Thank you. JR or Ray, would you like to add something, please?
JR, go ahead.
Okay. One of the disciplines that I have is that I keep a dictionary and a thesaurus open on my desk 24/7. And whenever a word comes up that somebody uses and we have a conversation about it, I go look it up and refresh my memory about that word. When you look up the word discipline, you recognize that it comes from the word disciple.
Mm-hmm.
And a disciple is a follower. A disciple is a pupil, a learner. So the very core nature of discipline for an entrepreneur has to be that you follow some set of standards, some set of rules, some set of policies, procedures, practices. And we talk a lot in my business, I talk with my mentees and with my clients about the discipline that comes along with money, which is you have to base what you do on economic principles and financial practices. And the principles and practices that make for success in terms of personal and small business entrepreneurial economics have been around forever. There's a book out called The Richest Man in Babylon.
Oh yeah,
by somebody else. And then there's a book by Benjamin Franklin that I wrote a commentary on and published earlier this year called The Way to Wealth. And The Way to Wealth was written in 1758, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
And so these ideas have been around forever. And by the way, the ideas in The Way to Wealth were Benjamin Franklin's ideas that he glommed from his 50, 60 years of experience. So from other sources. So these ideas have been around forever. And the discipline that an entrepreneur needs going into 2011 is the discipline to recognize, from a financial point of view, to recognize these economic principles and financial practices that work. Don't get distracted by whatever's hot and whatever's the latest and greatest of everything, because whatever was the latest and greatest this year will not be the latest and greatest next year. In fact, just as an example of that, if you look at the top 100 mutual funds and you go back for the last 25 or 30 years, what you discover is that each year, almost 80% of those funds turn over off that list. In other words, if you're first this year, you have no chance at all of being even on the list next year. So there are basic financial disciplines and practices that an entrepreneur has to follow if they want to succeed. And you won't find those in Money Magazine, or you won't find them in the latest and greatest books about it. You'll find it in these established ideas that have been around for centuries.
Okay. Thank you, Ray. Thank you, JR. We have a caller. Let me see if this caller have a question or whether or not it's one of our panelists. Caller, your first three digits are 760. Would you state your name, where you're calling from, and your question, please?
It's Jessie LaCosta calling from Carlsbad, California.
Well, good morning, Jessie, and welcome. Jessie is one of our panelists. Thank you. We've been having a great time, Jessie. I want to thank you for joining us. And the rest of my expert, if it's okay with you, can I now entertain Jessie to just give her a brief introduction about herself and the work she's doing, and do her presentation about how to empower entrepreneur going into 2011. Is that okay with the rest of you?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Knock it out of the park, Jessie.
Oh gosh. Now I want to hang up and run away. I was hoping that I could join in the beginning, but I had some client issues. So unfortunately, I haven't been able to listen to everything that everyone has said. So I want to apologize in advance if I happen to repeat any information. But as I mentioned, I'm calling from Carlsbad, California, which is just a little bit north of the city of San Diego and just a little bit south of Orange County and Los Angeles. Originally from the East Coast, though, so kind of lived in a lot of places. Basically, for me, I do a lot of things with organizations of many sizes and also working with entrepreneurs. And even people who are in transition and considering becoming an entrepreneur. Most of what I do focuses around what I call brand leadership, which is really a way of marrying your purpose, your vision and your mission, and everything that you're about, especially as an entrepreneur, which is your brand, everything that you project about the value that you bring and the impact that you make. And so we build around that to create sustainable businesses. I just gave a presentation yesterday, and we were talking about this concept of sustainability, and it's something that I see as being really important. It always has been, but maybe more so coming into the new year, is this understanding that we need to be very cautious or careful if we're looking at growing fast or just trying to pay the bills and then grow that exponentially without a lot of focus or direction. I think that what I see happening is that even as entrepreneurs, there's a lot to be said about kind of getting back to the basics and knowing what is the core idea of who we are and the core promise that we're going to make. So we might deliver 10 products or, you know, 25 services, but out of all of that, what are the two or three that mean the most to us and that we can create sustainability around, something that we feel our marketplace not just wants but needs, and not just needs but wants, and that they're willing to pay for. And that I'm going to guess that we're going to see a lot more businesses moving around this and being more adaptable and flexible with their offerings. I see a lot of business models changing from companies that never expected to change a business model. The other thing that I'm hoping for in the coming year is this sensitivity to the actual people part of our products and our companies. Is in that understanding of getting back to the basics is also that part of being profitable is also considering your people. Because without your people, And that may mean just a vendor or a client that you collaborate with outside of maybe the client arrangement, or it could be a supplier. It could be someone that you collaborate with just on a per-project basis. But those are your people. And without those people, you really aren't going to be able to sustain your business. So even as we have to be flexible and adaptive, I'm hoping to see this focus and this concentration on kind of the humanity side of what we're doing. And it's interesting, I don't know if anybody had mentioned this, there was a really interesting panel discussion, a huge report. I don't know if you can still get it. I think it was it was either the Harvard Business Review, it could have been Forbes. It was one of the big ones, and they looked at what leadership is going to mean in the future. And it was really interesting because one of the top words that came up was actually creativity in terms of being a good leader. And I think that's going to follow along with entrepreneurs as well. And then the second thing that they brought up was an intimate connection with clients. And so instead of us casting these huge nets and not really knowing who our consumers are or our clients, this notion of having a very deep and robust relationship with our clients and speaking that way to them, especially in our marketing and our advertising. So that's kind of my soapbox for what I think may happen in the future and the things that we can consider to empower ourselves.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Before I ask you another question, Jesse, I just want to let you know one of the beauty around working with experts is that we don't ever get things repeat, because what you just brought on, the other experts did not mention. So it's a good thing that everybody have their expertise and their skills and their stories, and they know how to stick to it.
Here.
My question for you, Jesse, is what are some of the difficulties that you have been experiencing working with entrepreneurs around creating sustainability?
That's a great question. Probably the top thing is focus.
Mm-hmm.
It almost goes against what I said, right? I'm talking about being flexible and adaptive.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I notice, and myself included, what I notice is this excitement and this eagerness to do whatever it takes,
mm-hmm.
right? To maybe change our services and change our business model, which is fine if it's done strategically.
Mm-hmm.
But a challenge is that, you know, many of us are running against the clock.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're watching the news. We're frightened of what we see. Some of our best clients say, I'm sorry, I can't afford you anymore. Or it sounds great, but you'll have to get back to me in 3 or 4 months. And
mm-hmm.
so we lose focus on the end goal.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't mean that you can't change and take those baby steps in the midst of reaching for that end goal.
Mm-hmm.
But because we become so reactive, we don't even consider the end goal and we mm-hmm. lose focus. And
yeah,
I think it's a challenge.
Mm-hmm. And that's where the creativity piece comes in. So now I'll tell you the question that the other experts are working on now, Jesse, and I'm going to
okay.
go to Ray, and then I'll come back to you for your input on that. The question on the table was, what are some of the disciplines that you think entrepreneurs need to go into 2011 with? So I'll come back to you, and now I'll go back to Ray. So we have played catch up. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Dr. Ray.
Okay. Well, if I can get back to my basic premise mm-hmm. Earlier, that if you're doing something that you love, and whatever that activity is. Now, the difference between people who really succeed and people who just either make a living or don't succeed, the way the world is set up, it's set up so that we work 8 hours a day, just enough to make you exhausted. So another 2 hours to get back and forth from work, so that's 10 hours a day. And then you've got another, let's see, what's it, about another six hours, let's say, just to do whatever you got to do, play with your kids, pay your bills, watch a little TV because you're so exhausted, that at the end of the day, you've just done a job. And most people, that's what it is in life. They just work to do a job because they don't really love doing what they love to do. But the people who are really successful, what I have found about them is, first of all, they love to do what they do. And what they do is they work at their whatever – they don't call it work. They call it play. Mm-hmm. So it's a difference. They play at their activity that they really enjoy doing. And it's for them – It's like if you do something that you really enjoy, let's say, you know, playing cards or doing a sport or whatever, you can work 10, 11, 12 hours, and you got to say, where'd all the time go? It's just like,
that's right.
It's like that. Mm-hmm. Now, the person who enjoys doing what he's doing, either even as an employee or as someone who's in business for themselves, entrepreneur, either way, if they're enjoying what they do, At the end of 12 hours, they've already worked a half a time more than the other person who just got through the day, hating mm-hmm. what they do because the society is set up so that you can work 8 days, no matter what, 8 hours a day, kind of like going through anything. And then at the end of 40 hours a week, you can deal with it. And then thank God it's Friday TGIF, you know. But
yes,
but people
yes.
who really enjoy doing what they're doing, they don't have that kind of mentality. So. You know, now, the problem is, and this is where the discipline comes in, if you work too much at doing something, you burn out. So the people who I found that have the real discipline, what they've done is they set the goals as, and they don't, some of them have, you have a big goal, then you have little medium goals, and then you break these medium goals into small goals, and then even smaller, what we call the to-do list, something you're going to do over the next day or two and so on. And what they do is they set the goals within a time frame, and then they set their other activities within a time frame. That takes a lot of discipline. That's and once you learn how to start doing that, now what you can do in 8 hours, because you know it and you love it so much, or 10 or 12 hours for that matter, you're much more efficient. And then you look and say, how else can I do things? And when you come across various obstacles, and if one thing doesn't work, well, experiment, because you're having fun. This is life is fun. If you make it boring, and if you make it dull, and you make it exhausting, that's exactly what it's going to be. But if you make it fun, going after challenge, solving challenges, create, understanding problems, and bringing solutions to those problems, you cannot help but be successful. And that's how I look at the world.
That's right. Thank you, Jesse. I'm going to come to you, but before I allow you to answer that question, I want to just give the other experts a head up. After Jessie is through giving her contribution to this question, then we are going to move into the portion where I allow you to speak about all the documents, the books, and all the resources that you have written or are writing that entrepreneurs can find beneficial. So, Jessie, please go ahead and give your contribution to this question.
I was listening to his responses and became so engrossed that I have to be honest, I've almost forgotten.
You forgot the question.
The question.
The question is, what are some of the disciplines that you think entrepreneur needs to have in place?
Okay. Gosh, I don't know if I have much different to say. I do really agree with and like the idea of this placing into a schedule and this concept of doing what we love but not becoming burned out. I think that another thing that I see is beneficial for many entrepreneurs is to actually once in a while do a SWOT analysis on what they're doing. Now, that can be a SWOT analysis on the actual products or services that you sell. It could be how you are creating balance in your life. For those who don't know what a SWOT analysis is, it's strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. And many people do these in four quadrants. And so what you can do, and this is really for your own benefit, is to look at your strengths and weaknesses, and those are considered internal components of an organization or a business. So a strength might be your background or your degrees or your qualifications. A strength may be that you have actually low overhead because you're a home-based business. A weakness might be because you're a home-based business, you don't really have great access to meet with clients or maybe you don't have the amount of staff that you need. And then the opportunities and threats are external perspectives. So the opportunities would be something that happens outside of the actual business. So the opportunities could be that you actually met somebody at a networking function and you thought you didn't have the opportunity to offer, let's say, a specific assessment that really would bump up your business. But you met that person and maybe you can do some independent work. So there's opportunities under networking. And threats could be the economy in of itself. Threats could be the location. Perhaps your location worked for the first 2 years, but now the neighborhood has changed and you're not drawing in the type of customers that you need. So I think something that can be a real valuable tool to put into place, and maybe do it once a quarter, maybe do it once a month, is to do what I call, many business people call the SWOT analysis, and just take a real, you know, hardline view at what you're bringing to the table.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Jesse, for your insight there. Jar, would you go ahead and speak about the books and all the things that you have written that entrepreneurs can use to tweak what they're doing?
Absolutely. the first book we wrote was called Money for Life. It's called Money Now, Money Later, Money for Life, How to Thrive in Good Times and Bad. You can find it on our website, which is Eureconomics. That's the word Eureka and the word economics put together into a single word. I find making up words to be a lot of fun. So it's Eurekonomics, EurekonomicsEurekonomics.com. You can also buy the book on Amazon and pay a lot more money for it. And I don't have to spell Amazon for it. The other book that we've written, which I'm really proud of, is Benjamin Franklin wrote a book in 1758 called The Way to Wealth. And in The Way to Wealth, he simply compiled a story using a character named Father Abraham to repeat the little sayings that he had sprinkled through Poor Richard's Almanac over the years. And it's a great book, but it's sort of hard to interpret sometimes, so I wrote a commentary on each of the segments of the book. And then I had a gentleman named Nelson Nash, who's renowned across the country as a personal economist. And Nelson wrote my foreword, and in it he said, "This commentary ranks right alongside George Klassen's The Richest Man in Babylon as the complete answer to the problems created by the arrogance of the financial community during our times." To me, that's a great testimony, because Nelson has held out The Richest Man in Babylon as being biblical almost. So both of those books are available on Amazon. The Money for the Way to Wealth is not available on our website yet. We haven't gotten around to it, but it is available at CreateSpace as well, CreateSpace.com, and another site that you can get an ebook version of it, a PDF version of it, at a site called offthebookshelf.com, there are lots of great small authors and small publishers that have books on that website. All of those things focus on paying attention to the basic economic principles and financial practices that have proven to be successful for entrepreneurs for centuries and millennia. There's nothing new in those books, but much of what's in those two books has been obscured by misinformation and disinformation over the last 35 or 40 years, and that the folks that put that out are the folks that have created the financial crisis we're in today, and the only way we're ever going to get out of that is one American at a time, solving their personal financial problems, and one entrepreneur at a time operating their business in a more prudent and safe way to succeed based on these principles and practices. Mm-hmm. So I thank you for giving me that opportunity. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
JR, I'm going to come back to you because I really want. I know you're going to be leaving us before the end. And before you go, I really want to have you speak a bit about You Be the Bank. So I'm going to come back to you before that and make sure I get it in before you slide away.
Okie doke.
Yeah, do you speak about Locke does not live here anymore, girl?
I sure can. Thank you. I want to say, again, thank you for giving me this opportunity both to talk about my business and what it is that I've done, the growth and the success that we've had, but also where we are going. And you are right. We have coming out in December, and you know, hopefully folks will get this book. It is called Lack Does Not Live Here, The Real Dynamics of the Law of Prosperity for Black Women. And I wrote this book because I was saddened to watch Sunday after Sunday, and I counsel. One of the things that I do is I am a mentor to many young African-American women who want to start businesses, but they simply just want to have better lives. And what I learned is Sunday after Sunday, sitting in church, I find, you know, we profess faith, we jump, we scream, we shout, and we holler, and then on Monday, we can't pay our electric bill. And I wanted to figure out, and the book is not a condemnation of the church, it is how do you move your faith from faith to financial well-being and independence, and that's for both business owners and just for women in general, but particularly African-American women. And I wanted to help them see, even based on biblical principles, and it's not just about the Bible, but it is really about the principles, and I think Jeffrey may have spoke about this, that these are not new principles of wealth. And how do you have wealth? What I have found is that in our communities, we don't know how to do that. With all
right.
of the literature that's out there, it's never been written so that we understand it. And even though we can say things like, you know, God will open up the windows of heaven and pour me out a blessing, you know, I say in the book, but when the blessing comes, do you know how to handle it? If you
that's
mismanage
right.
it, then come next month, you're still going to be in a situation of lack. And so the book is not a condemnation. The book is, here is here's the knowledge. Here's what you need to do when your blessing comes, and what do you need to do with that? How do you move from faith to finance? How do you move out of where you are in a situation where every month you're crying because you haven't been able to manage what you've already been given? And so, hopefully, as we make those promises and those resolutions for ourselves for the new year, they'll get this book. And the book is both available on our website, which is AlonCouture.com and AlonCoutureCosmetics.com, but also you'll be able to purchase it through Amazon. I'm going to be like Jeffrey, if you want it at a less expensive cost, you can get it from us directly. But if not, you can also get it through Amazon.com. And I really, Daphne, wrote this book because I'll just quickly cite an example of a woman who had called me for counseling. We sat down at a table for 2 hours. This woman makes $80,000 a year. Her home is not being foreclosed on from the bank because of the crisis. It's being foreclosed on because twice a year she goes on a cruise. She can't figure out where her money is going. And she also can't figure out why she can't pay her bill. She has two part-time jobs along with her full-time job, and she can't figure out how to make her life work. And we sat down and we put a plan together for her. And one of the things that she said as she's, you know, tears are streaming down her face, said she's looking at this plan and she said, why didn't somebody tell me that this is how this works and I could have done this years ago and I could have been so much more successful? One of the exercises that we do is we ask you to look at your life from the time you first entered the workforce. That could have been 17, 18. If you're like me, you're 50-some-odd years old. By this time in my lifetime, and I put my own in the book, I've made close to $3 million. Where does that go? and you and I have them work through a process of looking at where that wealth went. That's not just money, that's wealth. Where did that wealth go? So those are the things that we talk about in the book, and hopefully we can begin to change not just a life, but the book will begin to change our communities, and we can begin to understand how to move our children forward if they don't have this lack mentality, but they have a wealth mentality, which is really a health mentality. It is a freedom mentality when you look at life from a different perspective. So thank you once again for allowing me to share that.
You know, Yolanda, I'm so excited that you took a start to start this conversation, especially around our kids and girls, because I know black families, when they are getting ready to talk about money, whatever component of money, they always ask the kids to be out of the room. Where
right.
are the other ethnic groups and races?
Right.
The kids are part of the conversation, so they grow up with a respect and understanding for money. We put them mm-hmm. out of the room or out of the conversation. So I'm so glad that you are taking a stand to make a difference around this and to create the legacy that is so well needed. And
if I can take out of our conversations that we do have with our children is this thing that we say all the time: I don't have, or we don't have, we don't got, we don't have, or I don't have any money. Mm-hmm. If we can stop our children, because then you create lack mentality
right.
in our children. If we stop doing that, and I say in the book that lack, you know, we fill in, nature abhors a vacuum, and if I believe I have lack, I'm going to fill in that lack gap in some way, and that's why our children are selling drugs on a corner, or because they're going to fill in the gap.
Right.
They're going to fill that gap in with something.
Can I jump in here for a quick second?
Sure, JR.
Yolanda, I could almost not contain the emotion that I'm feeling right now. I would love to sit down and talk with you about taking the Money for Life book and adapting it to your community, because what you're saying is exactly what we say in that book.
Yeah.
It's the same thing.
Yeah.
We probably aren't able to communicate it as effectively as you are, so I'd love to have the opportunity to get those ideas out. As many ways as possible.
Fine, and I know we've got to let Daphne's other guests talk. If she can share an email where we can exchange information, that would be great, so that we can maybe continue a dialogue. That would be wonderful. I'd like to do that.
I just wanted to let you know how very important what you're doing is. It's extraordinarily important. And
thank you for doing it.
And you all know what I'm excited about most of all? That I happen to be the guest of, the host of this show, and I will get complimentary autographed copies of all these wonderful books. Oh, so with that being said, but, you know, Yolanda, another thing that we need to, and I can only say we because I hear black people say that a lot. The kids ask for something, and they say, "What do you think, money grew on the tree?"
Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
So it's a language. That another thing. And again, I just thank you. I thank you for the work that you are doing. And of course, yes, I will share information of all the people who are on the panel together, so you all can network together and add value, because we are all in this together. We are on a journey.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Ray, you're on.
My goodness. I'm listening to all these wonderful people here. Thank you very much. I'm very excited myself.
Oh.
Well, I'm working on two books. I haven't finished them yet. One's called Creating Your Own World. And some of you may be familiar with that story called The Secret. Well, The Secret is interesting. However, it doesn't get down to the real details of exactly what you need to do to create your own world. That's what The Secret is about, finding out what's right for you. And how do you do it? So in any event, in my book, Creating Your Own World, which I'm very close to getting it done now, hopefully I have it done within a year, We get down to the exact detail, how you think, how you set your mindset, you know, the idea that you have two parts to your mind. You have the conscious mind, you have the subconscious mind. And in this respect, the conscious mind sounds pretty smart, and it is, because that's where we're all at right now, and it's strong, and it's but the truth of the matter is it's smart, but it's actually physically very weak, where the subconscious mind is kind of on the dumber side, but it's very, very strong, and it's the connections to the thoughts that you need to become successful. And so in any event, this particular book gets into that idea of how you create your own world by understanding where thoughts come from and who the creator is and how it all works, and step by step on how your mindset, where you should be thinking, how to change what I call the subconscious mind a field. And the field has two things in it. Think of it a huge field out there. And in this field, they've got flowers and they've got weeds. And that's in your subconscious mind. And the flowers are the good things about how you should think. For example, being honest, being a hard worker. Whereas a weed would be, you know, like stealing is okay. I can justify stealing. Well, I needed it, so I'll steal. Those are called weeds. You got to pull some of these weeds out and replace them with flower ideas, good quality ideas. So that's one book I'm working on, and hopefully it'll be finished within a year. Another one I'm working on is sales techniques and getting down into the basics. I did my doctorate on it. I've kept it on the shelf because I've been teaching, and I've been teaching these ideas in the university that I taught at, which was Central Connecticut State University, for years. And I have a number of wonderful students that have succeeded by sharing the proper sales techniques and relating them to a philosophy of creating your own world. So those are the two books I'm working on. In the meantime, what I've got involved in is actually publishing. I've become a publisher, and I have one of my clients. She just published a book. We just published a book on quilting. And at quiltersportal.com, which partners and I own that one, we have her quilting book, and it's Deborah Griffin, and her book is a nice quilting book. In fact, I'm in the process now of contacting some of the large stores that deal with those type of books, and trying to get that sold. So in any event, that's one of the activities I'm involved in. But the other activity that I'm very heavily involved in is URL optimization, or URL optimization. Some of you may know it as SEO, search engine optimization, but I've claimed that's a misnomer. No one can optimize a search engine. The only thing you can optimize is your URL, which is your address, your internet address on your website. And so we've coined the word URL. And we branded that, and we're in the process of working that now. And a number of clients that we've just put on the books recently, once they've optimized their site, they're now seeing their results get on the first and second page of search engines with respect to their keywords. So that's an area that I'm very interested in working with. And if any of your listeners are interested in getting involved with that, go to the site. It's called optimizedsearching.com. Or you can type in the word URLO in a Google search, URLO, and that'll come up there. You can find us there. And we're looking for people who want to get off their rump-a-dump and want to market. Hey, listen, today the ability to market and work from your home is beyond belief. Jerry, I think you're going to be you'll agree with me, since we're about the same age. 40 years ago, and I was making at the time $12,000 and $13,000 a year, and calling up. Everything was a toll call. I mean, I'd call the town next door. That was a 10-cent toll call. Everything was my telephone bill in those days used to be $100 a month, $150 a month sometimes, as I was continuing to build my business. In the meantime, today, the communications are unbelievably inexpensive. I mean, my communications bill is something like $35 a month, and that's the ability to call all over the United States. I contact with people all over the world through internet, Skype, and so on. So our ability to communicate, get on the phones, call up people. And that's how you're gonna you can create business. So I'm looking for people who want to market themselves. If you want to be an entrepreneur? Come on, one of the entrepreneurial endeavors of this country is being in sales itself. Every salesperson out there is an entrepreneur, and by definition, that's exactly what they are. They're in business for themselves. And in fact, all of your guests here, if I listen to them closely, they're all out there selling every day. So selling should be a wonderful thing, not something that you fear. So in any event, that's one of the things I wanted to add.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Ray. Excuse me. Jesse, I know you, I don't know what you're working on.
I'm sorry. Jesse? You cut out there on my phone. I heard.
Okay. I don't know if you are working on any books or any articles. I know you write regularly for the Examiner or something.
Right.
Okay.
Oh, my gosh. I've had two books that I'll be honest, I haven't quite finished. One of these days I will. The first one is actually about crisis and crisis communication, but it's really about how our own brands, our personal brands, and communication in a sense of understanding our strengths and weaknesses and using them in a state of crisis has really propelled many people forward. One of these days I'll actually finish it, but initially it was going to be the story of my life, and I felt that was far too focused on me, so I've been interviewing people over the past couple of years. So unfortunately that's not available for purchase. One that will be hopefully in the next maybe 6 months to 12 months is actually a children's book. And I wrote it with my mother based loosely on a true story of a dog that I had who went through a terrible, terrible dog fight and experienced extreme anxiety after that. And one of her cats who was terrified of dogs. And there was something that happened emotionally, intellectually, spiritually, however you want to look at it, between these two animals after my dog had experienced such incredible anxiety. I'm also a PTSD survivor. So one of the things that I did was use a lot of the techniques that I learned in terms of dealing with phobia and trauma and incorporating it into a children's book. I waited to finish that because in just a month, I'm finishing a program at Portland State called Interpersonal Neurobiology. I do not expect anybody to remember what that is. The best way to explain this is it's actually the science of brain, mind, and relationships, and how our relationships can change our brain and change our mind and actually heal us from past trauma and crises. And so I wanted to wait until I had a really good, grounded understanding of some of the psychology and neuroscience behind this to finish that book. What's available right now is really getting back to the focus of what I do, which is branding. And I had a boot camp that I did live and recorded that for people so that they can take it at their own leisure. And so it's you can get the DVD and you can get a binder if you choose. I've offered it two ways to be environmentally friendly. Some people don't want to print out all of the PowerPoint slides, so they may just want the DVD and it has the audio and the PowerPoint slides. And you can get that at my website, which is www.bluerio.net. And the other thing that I'm probably most proud of and very excited about is I spent the last year developing an assessment. So it is basically an organizational assessment, so it's better for a larger company. So if you're an entrepreneur with, you know, a good, you know, five or more employees, it would be more suitable for you. And it looks at the internal strengths of the organization from a brand perspective. But as I did that, I realized that I wasn't able to serve my smaller clients, the sole proprietors or the three-person organizations. So I have started doing semi-customized surveys that we can use to get a good sense of what your brand is and how your followers, your clients, your vendors, your colleagues, how do they truly perceive the solution that you offer, and are you meeting their expectations? And then from the answers of these surveys, we can reevaluate business plans, strategic plans, marketing plans, even, you know, general branding. But that's something that you would need to contact me for, and then we can, you know, discuss your needs. It's a much more customized approach, because I have a hard time with cookie cutter approaches when it comes to business solutions. So if I have thoroughly confused anybody and everybody, just email me and I'll tell you what's going on.
Okay. All right. And just to throw my piece in there, I too am working on a few books, and because I have the platform to speak about them as they progress, I'm not going to take the time to do that now. But the one thing I want to talk about right now is the dreaming room that I am doing for entrepreneurs or want to be entrepreneurs. And this is a creation by Michael E. Gerber, who is the author of The E-Myth. And I am licensed to administer that experience here in Connecticut. And my plan is to have my first dreaming room coming up in beginning. It's a 12 weeks experience, and I'm looking to begin the first one on January the 8th. So if people just keep listening to me, and I will be telling you how you can become part of that experience. So lots of wealth of information there for all entrepreneurs to just get all the information you want to educate yourself and to make business a better thing for you. You mentioned, you heard JR mention earlier on that you need to realize that you're not only working for yourself, but you're also working for your families and also to create a legacy. So with all this information that's handed out, we are giving you on a golden platter all the tools to do that. So, JR, I think we lost Dr. Ray. I don't know whether it was intentionally or he just got disconnected, but we hope he will come back. JR, I want to hear from you about You Be the Bank.
Okay. Gee, I thought you'd never ask.
You're so mean to me.
Now, basically, when we talked earlier about the economic principles and financial practices that have been around forever and ever, and the books, The Way to Wealth and The Richest Man in Babylon, the myth, the problem that's been created over the last 30 or 40 years is that folks have been convinced that very large organizations know much more about how to do things than the individual knows how when it comes to money. And so we've created mutual funds, we've created ETFs, we've created all kinds of financial vehicles. We wrote a law in 1974 called ERISA, which has been modified a half a dozen times in major ways. And all of this was designed to theoretically help Americans handle their money more effectively and in better ways. The reality is that my parents and my grandparents died in their homes, which were paid for, without debt, and they did so in a very comfortable way, and they were not a burden to society. They were not a burden to their family. Both my parents died from cancer. Well, my mom in particular suffered 18 months, but she did it in her own home, and it wasn't. So what's happened is we've created these behemoths. I call them behemoths. It's a large government, large unions, large investment firms, large banks, people who all of who want to make a claim to your money. The only way to overcome this, it's actually a disaster, we're living in the financial disaster that it caused, because we were all convinced we should have mortgages up to our eyeballs. And the only way to overcome that is by becoming your own bank. And the only way to become your own bank is to save money and get out of debt. And it's a process. It's not just an event. You can't just do this instantaneously, but it's a process. And what Yolanda was talking about earlier is exactly the same thing. only in different terminology. And,
That's exactly right.
So I have made a commitment, my wife and I have made a commitment, that we want to re-educate the entire country about this. And we work constantly. We work 6 and 7 days a week. I'm on the phone hours every day talking to insurance agents, financial advisors around the country, talking to insurance companies and their executives. I don't talk to investment companies because they don't like what I have to say. Because what I have to say is that they're the ones that are bamboozling us. They're the ones that have taken... In 1974, when I got my first license, 95% of the money that was invested in stock markets and mutual funds, or stock market, was invested by individuals, and 5% was in mutual funds and other vehicles. Today, it's just the opposite of that. 95% of the money that people have invested in 401ks and IRAs are in mutual funds and other types of vehicles like that, and they don't have control. They've lost control of that money. They've given up control. They've given their money to strangers on the hope that stranger is going to treat the money as well as they would treat it themselves. It isn't going to happen.
No.
So we have to start getting our money back into our own pockets and into our own accounts. And there's a way to do that has been tried, tested, and proven for decades, centuries, even millennia. And so that's what the Money for Life book is all about. That's what the Urie Economics website is all about. That's what our practice with individuals. It's also what our practice is with agents and advisors all around the country, is to teach them how to teach their clients these principles and practices and become their own bank. So I can't get much more into it because I'd have to get into details, and details could take hours.
Mm-hmm. And then you and I need to have a conversation about how we could probably discuss about you educating this community. And that's a conversation for another time. Dr. Ray, welcome back.
I'm sorry to have somehow I got cut off here, and
yes,
sometimes it happens. I understand.
Yeah, we know you did. You didn't hang up on us because we know you love us. So we know that you didn't do that. I'm throwing a question out for all the experts. I'm going to start with JR. Most entrepreneurs do not understand how to pay themselves and the importance of paying themselves. If you can suggest a system by which we do so, because you also mentioned about how to make sure we lock in annually a certain amount of money that we're going to put aside for what they call rainy day in Jamaica. That's what they call it.
Yeah. In Jamaica gets a lot of rainy days. we have a program called Lock It In As You Go.
Mm-hmm.
If for example you're 40 years old and you want to retire when you're 65, you got 25 years, and when you retire at age 40, you say to yourself, well, I want to have $10,000 a month income when I get to be 65. All right, so how much of that do you have now that's guaranteed will be there when you're 65? Well, most people, when you ask them that, say, well, you know, I got so many dollars in my 401k, but that's not guaranteed that it's going to be there. Mm-hmm. In fact, people who decided they were going to retire in January, February of 2009 found out that they had only 40, 45% of what they thought they were going to have. So how many dollars you've got in an account isn't the thing. It's how much income do you have guaranteed at that point in time. And we have a whole set of strategies that will allow you to lock in that income, so that at age 40, you say, okay, I've got 25 years to go. I want $10,000, so I got to lock in, you know, let's just say, what that comes out to, $500, $600, $700 a month. So this year, I got to figure out how to lock in $700 a month of income when I'm 65. I got to put enough money away that will grow and produce that amount of income guaranteed when I get there. And the next year you look and you still need the same 10,000, you lock in some more. And the next year you look and you say, well, I'm going to need 10,500. So now you've got to lock in a little bit more than you did the two previous years. And we do that every year so that when you get to age 65, the money that you need to retire on or to have for your passive income you don't have to work for and you won't outlive will be there, regardless of what happens in the marketplace with real estate, with the stock market, with mutual funds, with any other kind of investment.
Thanks. Thank you, JR.
And listen, folks, I have to go because I've got a 10 o'clock a meeting that I have to get to. So thank you all for sharing so much with me. I really look forward to connecting with you offline and carrying on some additional conversations.
Thanks, JR, so much for investing time and expertise. And you and I will be in conversation. And thank you so much again.
You're welcome. And bye-bye, all.
Bye-bye, JR.
Bye-bye.
Okay, my other experts, you want to talk about the system you have in place to pay yourself and all of that?
Sure. I'll just jump in. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I did when I started was I made a commitment as to how much money I thought I would need to live on every year, annually, as I began this company 10 years ago. And that started off, it was a pretty low figure, and as the company grew, as our objectives grew, and we were able to generate additional resources through our other brands, I would increase my rate of pay. But I made the commitment. I think it has to come down to, you know, if you cannot sustain yourself through income, through a paycheck, then your business really won't continue to survive. It does no good for you to be homeless and out, you know, it can't pay your bills while you're struggling to keep your company in place. So I think the first thing you have to do as an entrepreneur is you need to make that commitment. I appreciate the things that JR was saying about wealth building for especially African American entrepreneurs or just us in general, is that we absolutely have no savings. Yeah, you know, we don't put aside money once a month or every 2 weeks from a paycheck, from income that's coming in. We haven't gotten to an understanding that is our rainy day fund, that is our retirement fund, that is what we need to have in place if we're going to sustain the same kind of a lifestyle once we have worked for 25, 30 years at our own businesses. At the end of it, what do you have? And that, again, comes back to that thing that I said in the beginning, is that you have to have a plan. It's not just your business plan. It's a personal plan. You have to have a personal plan in place if you're going to be an entrepreneur. The business plan is wonderful for the business, but what's your personal plan? You know, and so your personal plan has to include, how much money am I going to invest in myself? So how much money am I going to pay myself? And then what do I need to live on when this is all said and done, and there is, and I'll need to have some savings in place. And so you have to, I like JR's, how he did that, how he established how that works. That's a part of our book, Black Doesn't Live Here Anymore. We give you ways to put that into perspective of how do you set aside money from every paycheck as an entrepreneur. Is it 2%, 3%? What is it that you set aside in a savings account for yourself so that you can continue to live? And I found it really intriguing and interesting, and I hope to connect with him, his thoughts and ideas around banks, and because we talk about that. And I'll give your listeners just a quick example, because it's not a new example. It is the example of Osceola McCarthy, who was a washerwoman in Mississippi. And over her lifetime, she took in laundry for $10 a week. $10 a week. This woman, 5 years ago, gave $2 million, close to $2 million to the University of Mississippi. She wasn't, that money wasn't in a bank. It was in a mattress in her house, underneath her mattress. She saved $2 a week. It took her
my
a long time.
Yes.
Discipline. She had the discipline. When she called the bank, they thought that she wanted to give $25. They thought she was giving $25. She said, I have a donation to go to the University of Mississippi. Mm-hmm. They thought she had $25 to give, so he came to her house, thought he was going to sit down and get this $25 donation. She mm-hmm. told him, no, young man, you need to flip that mattress over right there. Mm-hmm. He flipped the mattress over, and it was close to $2 million there.
My God.
Wow. Established scholarship. So I agree with JR. We have taken and given our power to mm-hmm. invest in ourselves to mm-hmm. other people who we think mm-hmm. can do this better than we can. Once mm-hmm. we learn about what that means, saving mm-hmm. ourselves, we come out better.
Mm-hmm.
We have better lives.
Thank you. Thank you. Jesse?
Pardon me?
Yes?
Oh, Jesse, you want to... you want to contribute to, you know, what system can entrepreneurs have in place to pay themselves? Or
I can try here, but I think that your guests have done a fabulous job. So
okay.
How about if I take a slightly different angle? Because I really like what they've said. And by the way, thank you so much for pointing out the personal plan versus the business plan,
mm-hmm.
Because that really is a hard one for our entrepreneurs to consider, especially when we've got all the people like myself, consultants out there saying, do you have your plan? Do you have your plan?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
You know, so I thank you for that. I guess what I can chime in here with a different perspective is, outside of paying yourself, is for any of the entrepreneurs out there that have that altruistic side, I'll just say that there are strategies you can put in place to make sure you're still paying yourself and also giving back. And mm-hmm. I really can't take credit for this. I have to give my husband credit. Mm-hmm. And what happened is, a couple of years ago, we just moved here, and we had two offices stuck in one tiny room in a condo. It was absolutely absurd. We had one of those Asian screens between us, and when he would push his chair back, the screen would fall on my head and vice versa. Mm-hmm. And there's all these things you do to try to save money while you're building your business. And mm-hmm. you know, to your point, it was one of those things where we're kind of forgetting that personal plan, and you just put everything back into the business. Oh, well, we don't need a big space. We can do it in one room. And, mm-hmm. you know, all these different things. Gosh, it's actually been a few more years than that. But mm-hmm. anyway, the story goes that because we were sharing an office, he overheard me giving away one more pro bono coaching session. And when I got the phone, he just said, can we look at some numbers? And the numbers were about the business, but they were also about, you know, what I was going to be able to contribute to even our wedding. We got married a little bit later in life. And mm-hmm. getting back to that sense of the personal plan. But for me, being able to contribute and give back is just who I am, and I can't stop that. So we worked together on how I could continue to grow the business, give back to our personal, you know, pot, not just for the rainy day, but for the strategic things happening in our personal life,
mm-hmm.
and also be able to do some of the things as a coach and entrepreneur I wanted to do. And so this formula might not be right for everybody, but I'd say, you know, find the formula that works. For me, mm-hmm. what I decided to do, maybe it's been 3 or 4 years now, is I take on 1 to 2 pro bono clients every 6 to 12 months. It depends on the mm-hmm. sophistication of the clients. Mm-hmm. And I take on 1 to 2 sliding scale.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. I have a waiting list. You know, I feel for everybody, but I have to not only pay my bills, but mm-hmm. I do want my business to grow.
Mm-hmm.
And so in terms of paying myself or salary, you know, everybody else has given some great tips, so I don't really want to add anything on mm-hmm. to that, except mm-hmm. to say that, you know, be careful of all the things that make you you, mm-hmm. and just be strategic about it.
Okay.
And I've found that that has really worked. And the other thing is that I've partnered with some other people. So if someone desperately needs the pro bono and I can't do it, I say, listen, here's another coach who might work with you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so that's you know, the one piece of advice I could give.
All right. Thanks, Jesse. Oh, I'm going to pose the question, where did all the time go? We are down to only 11 minutes. And Dr. Ray, I would remiss if I did not allow you to chime in here. So would you give
how do you pay yourself is the question?
Yes, as an entrepreneur.
Well, first of all, you have to really look at your lifestyle and who you are. And I come to the conclusion of really two kinds of people. There are savers and there are spenders. Some people and that are just, you know, a dollar goes into their pocket before you know it, they need that immediate gratification and they go and spend it. And spenders need immediate gratification. But when they've looked at success and successful people, they found that the successful people have the ability to delay gratification, and the unsuccessful people don't. That's one of the things that they've come across. And so I'm one of these kind of persons that I've always been able to delay gratification, and I'm a saver. So I don't need to do the latest and the greatest or the newest and the coolest type of things. So how do you pay yourself? Well, I always look at this. There's two kinds of money. There's what we call safety money or guaranteed money, and then there's risk money. And risk money is I take my guaranteed monies, which is, in other words, it has to cover my exact costs, whatever. You've got rent, you've got food, you've got entertainment, whatever your budget, figure out what you're going to spend. And then you take your risk monies and you put it into, some of it goes into your business, but some of it goes into other risks. Like, for example, I'm very heavy into real estate. I like real estate. And what I do is I understand it, I studied it, and I do a lot of reading. So I say, well, where can I put my risk money? And I understand demographics. The baby boomers are all moving to the South. I know that. So this is going to, right now, people hate Florida. The prices are coming down, but Florida's going to be one of the best investments that anybody can take right now. So you put your risk monies where that should be, and you just let time take place. So you have to understand how your monies are and how you are. So in any event, that's how I've looked at life. Now, I've been very, and I worked hard, and I made money and invested it properly.
Right. Well, thank you. We are down to 9 minutes, and I tell you, we really utilize these 2 hours greatly, and I am so excited about this segment. I want to give each of you, because I need to close up, I want to give you each 2 minutes to just do a wrap-up. We are down to 8 minutes now, so I want each of you to take 2 minutes, and then I have to do my closing.
Okay, can I start then? Because
yes.
I have a business appointment at noon.
Okay.
Okay, so please excuse me. In two minutes, I want to say, first of all, I want to thank you very much for having this. And not only, you know, I've been around the block a few times, as our guests have. But even so, I've learned new things, even from this little show. So there's always something new to learn.
Yes.
And so I want to thank you for that, Daphne.
You're welcome.
And to your other guests as well for that. I say, for those who are entrepreneurial, don't be afraid to try. Don't be afraid to make mistakes. The only mistake that you're ever going to make is if you don't try. That's the biggest problem. You know, I'm afraid of failing, so I don't try. That's wrong. You go out and try it. And what happens is, as you're trying things, you're going to see failures on one side, but they're not really failures. What they are is education. You learned what didn't work.
Right.
And then from there, you find out those that did work. And then so you're educating yourself as you go through your life. That's what it is. It's a constant education. Learn something new every day. I have a special daughter. I learn something new every day from her, as interesting as that may sound. And
yes.
And that's why I apply it to this little business that I do on the side for dances for special kids.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, so from my perspective, go out, try things. Don't worry about making mistakes. Don't worry about failure. Go out and try it and do it. Once you start doing it and keeping yourself busy, before you know it, the opportunities come. People like to work with people who want to work.
That's right.
People do
That's
not
right.
like to work with people who don't want to work. It's that simple.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank
you, Dr. Thank you. Ray. You know I love you, and we'll be talking soon.
Okay. Listen, I have to leave. Please, again, thank you, and thank your guests.
All right. You're welcome. Yolanda.
Sure. I'm going to do a whole night commercial. Just do it. You know, my father told me when I started my business 10 years ago, he said, you only have two choices in life. You either will do it or you won't. Mm-hmm. And you will never know if you have any success at this if you don't try. And I took him up on that. He was a teacher all of his life, always around students who he was encouraging and motivating to be their absolute best and to go out in the world and to attack their dreams. And he encouraged his daughter to do the very same thing, and I am glad that he did. I can never look back on it and say that I regretted making the choice, stepping out of a very secure six-figure job and you know income and taking on the risk of taking control of my own life. That's what entrepreneurship does for you. It allows you to take back some control of your own life and your individuality. And as an entrepreneur, I'm grateful that I did that. And so all I can do is encourage other folks out there that might be listening who are afraid, they have a dream trapped inside of them. Live the dream. Even if you have to live the dream part-time right now and you do something else while you do, while you're building the dream, you'll never know if you can be good at it or if you could be successful at it if you don't try. Thank you, Daphne, for having me
Thank you. And we have to have you back to talk about the book and all of that stuff. So we will be talking. You know I love you, my sister.
Thank you. I love you, too. Thank you
very much. All right. Jesse.
Yes, and just to ditto what everybody else said, but Daphne, thank you so much. I think this has been such a rewarding experience, and I'm so sad I had to jump in late, so I'm eager to hear
the
entire show.
You can hear it on the archive. You can catch it on the archive.
Exactly. So, and I love what everybody's just said, and especially this concept of fear. One of the things that I can share is that, you know, in this program and what I've been studying is that we learn that fear really can immobilize us. Mm-hmm. And it also stops us from making better decisions and more logical decisions because it's the emotional part of us, the emotional part of the brain. And it really shuts down our ability for logic and analysis. And so when that fear kicks in, the logic that we create about why we can't do it isn't even accurate.
That's right.
And the other thing that I can share is this concept, if you don't do it, you know, you won't know.
Mm-hmm.
Daphne, you know my story. At 16, mm-hmm. I was abducted. And I can tell you all of these lovely things that I see on TV shows, like I never looked back and I was positive my whole life. And that's actually not true.
Mm-hmm.
I've faced fear. I've decided not to do something because perhaps I would fail. And, you know, all of these things that happened. And then there came a time in my life where I had to reexamine what I had already been through.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not so much about, you know, what won't kill you will make you stronger. Sometimes it really brings you down. But it is about looking at the level of resilience.
Yes.
And I look back and I say, my gosh, I have been so much more resilient than I realize. And mm-hmm. so have my clients. And my clients teach me something every single day. And getting on shows like this, mm-hmm. you know, as I think it was Dr. Ray said, we're learning it each step mm-hmm. of the way. And one mm-hmm. of the things that we often forget in that lesson is our sense of resilience.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So whatever that level is, like she said, if it's starting part-time or if it's, you know, jumping right off that bridge and saying, I'm doing mm-hmm. it today, now,
mm-hmm.
it's just looking at where is your tolerance for that resilience.
Yes.
And then marry that with your passion and just say, this is the amount that I can do. Don't worry about what other people tell you.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, look at that sensibility and then say, this is my dream. This is what I bring to the table. This is the impact that I can make. And from there, you can launch that dream with a better sense of stability, with a better sense of security. It doesn't mean perfect. It just means better. I don't think that we're ever perfect. Maybe spiritually perfect, but right here, right now, we're always learning. And everybody is. That means your clients. That means your competition. You know, you can, you know, fall down and get back up again because it's resilience and your passion that'll propel you forward. And, you know, I can honestly say that. So I know that I can look back and think of all the times that I said, there's just no way I can keep going. And I did. And I
all
did
right.
so based on that passion.
Okay. I just want to thank all my guests, my expert this morning. And just to remind you that to know that you were created for a destiny and do not allow anyone to take you off track. I thank you guys and I'll be speaking with you offline.
Thank you, Daphne.
What's the plan that you have for me? people call it destiny. Will you let me know what's the plight that you've called me to? The thing I'm set aside to do. I trust you, Lord, to see me through. Will you let me look in your heart?
You've been called to change nations.